Hello and welcome into the KE Report. I'm your host, Shad Markowitz, and I'm talking today with Eric Wetterling, better known as the Hedgeless Horseman on many platforms like CEO.ca, on our platform at the KE Report, and also on his own site, ahedgelesshorseman.com. Eric, I know you cover the sector and you cover a lot of the different companies and the news that's happening, and we were talking off mic about how it's so hard to be just stuck in a few names when there's so many great names on sale and when there's so many companies that are presenting really compelling value propositions. So I guess I'd like to start off with the concept we were talking about how you've really diversified your portfolio a little bit more than you typically did. Why have you done that? And what are you seeing when you're looking at these valuations in the junior minors?
I have never seen the price value gaps wide across the board in the gold mining. I mean, we talked off mic about, okay, what we thought a few years back. It's like, imagine what the miners are going to be valued at or whatever when gold is at 1800. Well, we're there. And the gold juniors especially are reflecting nothing of the sort. So since I started investing in miners in 2015, I've never been as greedy as I am now. I never thought I would own, like, I don't know how many companies I'm up to, like 50 or so. But I just get pleasure out of, you know, seeing an opportunity and taking advantage of an opportunity. And I don't really care. I mean, I have some positions that are like minuscule, but I like the fact that, okay, if I see something that's, you know, given away for pennies on the dollar, Mr. Market, it just feels good to be able to take advantage of that. I hate when I see opportunities if you can't take advantage of it, because then it's a wasted opportunity. I mean, that doesn't only go for mining stocks, obviously. I mean, that's like, you know, staring at, I don't know, you know, through a glass window, and there's, you know, whatever you wish to own, let's say, on the other side, and you can't reach it. So, I mean, I'm kind of quenching my greedy thirst because I see so many opportunities, and I actually am okay with perhaps hampering my expected returns a bit, but at the same time, pretty much eliminating the company risk, like you said. And that allows me, it's like, okay, if I'm buying into some stories where I'm buying, you know, 0.002% of my portfolio, it's meaningless, really. I mean, for how the actual portfolio will do, but it feels good to buy something and feel, wow, at least I get, you know, got a chance to take advantage of the opportunity, no matter how small.
Yeah, I look at it as like, if, you know, I doubled my money or tripled my money, I would be thrilled with that. So why not do that with mining stocks? If you think there's 200 or 300% returns, it doesn't have to be a huge weighting. It could just be like, hey, I just think that for the small amount I invested, I think it's a good place to store my capital, because if I can double or triple my money in a year, 2 years, that's a great investment, even on a small amount.
Yeah, I think there are some juniors, for example, that they might have an expected return of 300%. And I'm buying a bunch with, let's say, you know, 200 to 220% return. So yes, I might be handicapping my returns a bit, but, you know, as a thank you, I'm super diversified. I sleep very well in terms of risk. I don't sleep well because I'm so greedy right now. But like, I'm cementing my, I'm becoming quite anti-fragile, I would say.
So basically, if you had a few 200% returns, sure, most people would say, why wouldn't you go after the best ones? Why wouldn't you go after the 500% returns? Because if I can get a low risk option on a 200% return and it's less risk, then I don't mind throwing some money into that.
Yes, because I mean, one thing I think is like, sure, there are cases, you know, some might have, you know, 300% expected returns. So yes, in theory, okay, obviously you should buy the ones that have, you know, 300%, but 200% is still super good, obviously. And I just love the feeling of like, okay, having a direct interest in these finite resources when you're reading. I mean, like today I saw an article about the backwardation in the futures market of metals. So it's like, it's screaming scarcity, basically. So we're buying up finite assets, finite real estate, for pennies on the dollar, and I just can't help myself then to just keep on buying. I mean, it's kind of frustrating, actually. It's like, I always want to stop even researching new juniors, because that's going to, you know, be number 55 on my buy list. And that's, it's a luxury problem, but it's frustrating to have that many choices where you're putting your money. I mean, at times when valuations were high and you were able to find, you know, let's say six companies, six hidden gems that were not appreciated yet by the market, then you're like, okay, this is good. Okay, this is a no-brainer. Maybe you'll have a, you know, 6 to 10 name portfolio, let's say. But now there's just, in my opinion, risk-adjusted free money spilling all over the table in the junior sector. And for greedy reasons, I just can't help myself then, you know, buying everything I see that's just, in my opinion, no-brainer buys. And of course, we will always have the regret, let's say, you know, one of the 40 companies just, you know, start trucking for whatever reason. You're like, oh, Jesus, I should have been, you know, 30% in that or whatever. So, like we know, I mean, there's always going to be regret. But, I mean, I like it from the standpoint of, like, greedy and being, I see myself really as an asset hoarder. I mean, I think you, obviously, if you're a value investor, you should think like an owner. What are you buying? I like the fact that, okay, I have a direct interest in metallic zones of interest, let's say. As an asset hoarder, it just feels nice to, like, okay, I own a tiny, tiny percent of all that potential within that land. But it feels nice to, like, okay, now I have some interest. I just like the fact that I'm getting so much, you know, no matter if it costs me some to the upside.
At this point, normally diversification is diversification, but at this point, they're all so cheap that it's actually, you're not going to get punished. And there'll probably be a lot of those that all rise with the tide. So you're getting the benefit of diversification, but you're also buying where there's really good valuation.
Yes, exactly. I mean, that's how I would put it. But that's actually the case. It's like my portfolio is way larger than I ever expected, you know, in terms of amount of companies I own. So I'm just trying to patch up every hole that I can find, basically. And, you know, if some does well, hopefully, you know, it will be enough to have a great return, let's say. And I just think you're getting so much for, you know, bang for the buck in that case.
Well, Eric, you're becoming an asset hoarder. And being an asset hoarder, you've now, you know, built up this basket of stocks. There are people, though, let's dig into this concept just a little bit further. There are people that would say, hey, you know, I'd rather just have concentrated positions in 10 companies or 6 companies, like you mentioned. But there's also the benefit of diversification of risk and jurisdiction. And if you think about it as managing an ETF, because I have a pretty large portfolio like yours where there's a number of names in it. But when I look at the GDX or GDXJ or SILJ, you know, I see 40, 50 companies in there and they have different weightings. And some of them are relatively small weightings where they're not going to blow up your account if you're wrong. But if you're right, you can have outsized gains. But do you have anchor positions that are bigger positions and then some that are medium-sized positions and some that are smaller positions? How do you decide the weighting inside of your portfolio?
Yeah, that's a good point. I have, you know, a few positions that are, let's say most of the positions are between 0.1 to 3%. Then I have some that are quite large, I mean, 10% plus. And I want to see, I mean, I would consider them cornerstone holdings or core assets, let's say. I do want them to have the margin of safety, meaning that you're buying something that's already known for less than it's probably worth, and have a very long pipeline for growth. Basically, buy and hold, fire and forget stories where, okay, you're buying something known, some known value for less than it should be priced at, and you're getting all the upside for free. So, okay, I mean, the nightmare scenario would be, okay, I'm only into, let's say, 3 early stage exploration stocks in Trump, super bullish gold and gold takeoff. Those 3 companies end up not finding any gold. So I have a beta of 0 because they don't have anything that, you know, is related to the gold price. That would be the nightmare scenario. So I really love, especially for the larger the position is, the more important margin of safety is. And of course, you can buy a mature developer, aka a trading sardine, let's say, where like, okay, you know, this is probably worth 100% higher. At the same time, if they can't do much in terms of value creation, you're not getting paid to wait. Because a growth story, for example, sure, price might go down. The gold sector might not kick off for another 1 or 2 years. but they will probably have created value. So when the revaluation happened, you have more beta in that case. But stocks like Bear Creek Mining, for example, which is a mature silver developer, I mean, that just ping-pongs up and down, up and down. You don't get paid to wait. When sentiment crashes, the stock goes down to pretty much where the last bottom was. When you have cases like Great Bear, which is an excellent example of a growth story, and obviously the more they drilled, the more margin of safety you had, even though it wasn't, you know, on paper. But every sentiment bottom was at a higher bottom pretty much than the last sentiment bottom. So you got paid to wait, even though it sucked that you had to sit through 50% correction as well. But those are the main, those are core stories, I would say. The ones that have margin of safety, where you know you won't end up with having no gold. And if the bull market takes a bit longer, you have a good team, good access to capital, let's say, that's going to create value with time. So if it takes longer for the market to actually kick off, your asset going up in value, even though they might, you know, have an increased dilution, for example.
Well, Eric, just to dig into this maybe a little bit more with a few company examples, it sounds like your margin of safety on the larger positions are ones that have resources in the ground. And to your point, if there's a rally in gold or silver, they actually have gold or silver. So it's a little bit of a known entity, but just not properly valued. Maybe you could give us one or two examples like that, and then one or two examples of maybe the earlier stage explorers, more of the drill plays where they're discovery plays, but you have a smaller weighting in them, but they could have an outsized gain when they make a discovery. Could you give us maybe an example or two of both kinds of companies?
Sure. I mean, I think Cabral Gold is a great example. I just spoke with the company an hour ago. They put out so many new leases over the last like 10 months. I mean, they have four drill rigs right now. They're thinking of bringing a fifth. They've just been drilling and drilling and drilling. If you look at the share price, it's been going down like most juniors the last year, let's say. So if you just were a new investor, you're looking at the share price like, well, this story isn't playing out at all. Because, I mean, you know, the price of the company is going down. But if you go through the news releases, you'll realize they've made like five new discoveries during that period of time. And I mean, I think their intrinsic value has been jacked up quite a bit in the last 10 months. And now you have the G Mining Ventures company. They're going to, you know, on the way of developing what would be, I think, the third largest gold mine in Brazil, right next door. So that hikes up the implied value of everything Cabral is doing due to, potential synergies, obviously. So it's like, if you look at share price, down. If you look at the news releases, what they've actually been doing, strap. And that's just paid to wait, in my opinion, because sentiment is going to change someday. And when the sector starts to, you know, head closer to fair value, a company like that has put on significant value over the last 10 months while it has gone down. At the same time, you have these very mature companies, they've added no value. So they'll just go back to whatever level they were, you know, at the previous peak, let's say. So that's, in my opinion, paid to wait. Great story where the price to value widens. And then when it comes to earlier stage exploration plays, I mean, I love them from a mathematical perspective, the risk reward, because they're also, I mean, bank success is cheap, developers are cheap, producers are cheap, especially gold, and early stage explorers are cheap. So it's like, there's bargains across the board, but what we know about compounding, I mean, margin of safety plays such a big role because you can't compound a loss. So even if you have the most no-brainer early stage exploration story, the odds are against you that it will have success. But let's say they have success and you actually, you know, get 1,000% return or whatever in a few years. Still, if you lose out on a big position like that, that money is gone forever, potentially, if the management team can't revamp the company, etc. So in those cases, yes, I prefer to play mathematical high-risk, high-reward plays as well, but I have much smaller positions where it's like, okay, if one in every 15 company, a good early-stage company, will make a discovery, then I'll at least have, you know, 15 of equal weighting, let's say, because, okay, one success is going to pay for the rest, let's say. But on the whole, I prefer to nowadays get in after the discovery hole Whereas the old me would be thinking, we talked about this before, you need to be in before the discovery hole. You need to take immense risk. But in reality, the revaluation typically just, you know, is on the order of 50 to 100% after discovery. So, okay, in that case, that would imply that the chance of success would need to be like, you know, 50 to, I don't know, 30%. But that's not the case. I mean, we know that most will miss. So I like early stage exploration stories, but I don't, they have to be really cheap right now if they're basically total blind grassroots exploration stories, because the chance of success is so low. And if there's something I don't want to be buying right now, it's only potential when there's so much banked success that's already selling for, you know, an easy 200% return.
Are there any total grassroots explorers that you are taking that risk on that you would have mentioned?
Well, I mean, Inflection Resources would be one. They have a huge land package in New South Wales. Due to code, I guess, and stuff like that, that's been, you know, a big drag. And they don't have an actual discovery yet. But that's why it's not a huge position. But they have a world-class team, immense land position, one of the best jurisdictions, I think, and there are giant deposits in the neighborhood. So that's one of those pure exploration-focused units. And I love it from a mathematical risk-reward perspective, because if there's a team that's going to, you know, find the next Cadia, for example, in the very neighborhood of Cadia, it would be that team. But at the same time, the chance of success is so, you know, low, and it's priced like it. I mean, if they, Cadia is worth, I don't know, multiple billions, they have a market cap of 10 million. So obviously you're not paying up for the success, but still, I prefer to buy, you know, a bird in the hand over two birds in the bush, especially as it correlates to position size.
Well, let's talk about one more company then, because we did one that has definite ounces in the ground with Cabral Gold. We did one that was more completely grassroots with Inflection Resources. What about a company that's made a discovery, but you still think there's a lot of room to run with the discovery they've made?
Yeah, I mean, I think Pacific Ridge is a good example. It wasn't, I wouldn't say a brand new discovery. There were some holes into it already, but now they're finding, you know, the highest grade intercept yet on the property. They have a big pipeline. Antofagasta just put out an option on one of their secondary assets. And I think that's no-brainer shape. I mean, obviously, it's not a guarantee that they will have the next Red Chris mine or whatever, but I think it's trading at, I don't know, 28 million Canadian. And you have Major partnering with one of their secondary assets and their flagship assets. I bet Majors would want to partner on that, but they're keeping that. So, okay, in the you know, some of its parts, I think it's, you know, still super cheap. And then we have, you know, I could go on Red Pine Exploration, No Superior. I'm just, you know.
That's fine. I think that those are some good examples, Eric. And it gives people kind of a idea of the kind of companies you're looking at in each category. One that has that margin of safety, you know, companies that have already made a discovery but still have room to grow, and then companies that are true grassroots drill plays that you just believe in the team and the project and are willing to take the gamble but at a smaller position size. So I do think we can dub you our official asset hoarder now, and always appreciate you spending some time with us here at the KE Report and sharing some of the companies you're looking at. Thanks, Eric, for coming on, and look forward to talking to you next time.
Thanks, Chad, and the same. And also, it's like many of the companies, all the companies I mentioned, I own, some are sponsors, so do your own due diligence.